Hello, everyone. Jim Coyle from Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Thank you so much for listening to our content. We hope you enjoy it. Make sure you're a subscriber at either your favorite podcast download or on our YouTube channel at Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Either way, just give us a like on any of those. We would greatly appreciate it. It helps us immensely. Thank you and have a great day.
Welcome to Indiana Sports Beat Radio, brought to you by the Hard Truth Distilling Company in Brown County, Indiana.
So for the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world,
pretty simple. I win. Google me.
You know that I'm the cream of the crop.
Oh. Now, from the Hard Truth Studios, here's Jim Coyle.
Welcome aboard to another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio, coming to you on this Tuesday from Rack House Number 1 from the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios. Glad to have you with us as always. Jim Coyle along for the ride today. Mike DeCourcy will join us. Gabriel Kevin Brockway will join us as well. Plenty to talk about. I did not mention the U.S. Open yesterday, so we'll talk about that a little bit. A.J. Guyton joining Assembly Ball as an assistant coach. You know, there have been some basketball rule changes, by the way. We'll bring those up with Mike DeCourcy as well. Of course, the Pacers are in a little bit of, they're in trouble now, after losing game four. We kind of knew that was a pivotal game, and they go on down to Oklahoma City and lose there to now trail 3-2 in the NBA Finals. The first time they have trailed in the NBA playoffs this season. As a matter of fact, this is the first time they've lost back-to-back games since the month of February, back when it was Arctic and cold. So they come back to Indiana now. Hopefully they can get things done, but we will certainly find out as the Pacers keep trying to hang on. Hey, what a hell of a run they made, though, to get back last night. I mean, they were down, and then they got back all the way to what, within one? And just could not get the deal done, unfortunately. But no shocker. I mean, it's not like they're playing Joe Schmo. They got a good run going. Larry, Las Vegas, Larry. I keep forgetting, but this time I didn't forget. Las Vegas, Larry is Bloomington, Larry. This week he is in town, and I met him. And actually, the first time was, we didn't even know it. But, I got the chance to meet Las Vegas Larry and his son, Wyatt. So grateful to get to do that. Always happy to put faces with the names, man. Always happy to put faces with the names. So I hope you guys have a safe trip, travels back out to the land of wonder, Sin City, Las Vegas, Nevada. But another day here in the beautiful Hoosier state. Hello, Mr. Fulton. How are you doing, sir? I hope you're doing well also. Let's see. I did not mention the absolutely incredible finish of the U.S. Open yesterday. It was wild. At one point, there were seven guys within either on the lead or within a stroke of the lead. It was crazy. And then they kind of started falling apart a little bit, except for JJ Spahn. He birdied the last two holes, but 18 on 18 of the U.S. Open, I think he had a one-stroke lead at that point, or no, or maybe he was tied. I can't remember. But he hit a 64-foot putt that slammed the door. I mean, he slammed the door on the rest of the guys chasing him. But what an absolutely great run for J.J. Spahn to clock in his only second PGA Tour win, I believe. And it's the U.S. Open. He had, on Sunday, I believe, he had five consecutive bogeys, if I remember correctly. And it is going to be, you know, that's a hard day to come back from. I got news for you. But you want to talk about the mental capacity it takes to keep battling through that. He did it. And he's your U.S. Open champion. So congratulations to him as well. Let's see. Is this going to be hopeless optimism day for the Pacers? Yeah, well, that's a good way of explaining it, to be honest with you. Yeah, it's been an uphill climb. When they lost game four, you know, I talked about it. It's not like it was rocket science. That game four was such an integral game because of all the things that went into it. They were going to have to then go on the road, and they would have an insurmountable lead, and it was the turning point. Unfortunately, it's not over yet, but it is an uphill climb. Do we go seven games? Do the Pacers come back and flex a little bit and push this to seven at least? And then if they do that, you know they have a chance. Hell, last night in a game that they were getting just, you know, slobber-knockered, they come back at, when you think that they're completely out of it. Just could not get all the way back. Justin said he went to bed at halftime, couldn't watch that turnover fest. Pacers looked rustier than an old nail. Well, you missed a hell of a comeback. I've got to tell you, they couldn't complete it, but it was a good one. Russell says IU has one scholarship to give now with the new commit, unless they take a hit and go over the 13 rev sharing. Yeah, I'm not sure that that's the case because you're allowed 15 scholarships. I can't remember how all that crap works. I've just got to, there's so much stuff going on. But he says hopefully they can convince the 7'3" player from Europe to choose IU and reclass. Yeah, that's an option, which, you know, they pick up another shooter, which I'll talk about that more later when Mike and Cabro join us. But I was shocked when I heard they picked up another player and that it was a 6'5" guard. I was a little surprised, but I understand he's a freshman, so that makes a little difference. It gives them something for the future. He's a hell of a point guard as well. So not bad to have that in the fold, especially when you're going to have a lot of movement next year. He's from Serbia. Probably maybe less likely to move on to a different place. Maybe he wants to get to a place where they want to, where he wants to keep it a little of the same. But Aleksa Ristić, 6'5" Serbian. Of course, you're going to, you know, I've talked a lot about these foreign players. It's coming, the foreign wave. It's already here. Illinois, you know, making hay, Louisville, Maryland, all these teams that are adding these guys. It's like the Beatles times 1,000, man. It's not the British invasion. It's the Serbian invasion. We'll talk more about that when the guys join. Five says the Pacers have them right where they want them. Now the pressure is on Oklahoma City. Yeah, well, we'll see about that as they'll come back to play at Gainbridge Fieldhouse in game six. See if they can get it done and push it to seven games. And if so, you know what? Even though that seventh game is in Oklahoma City, you just never know. I would hope that most people have learned by now to not count these Pacers out. Again, last night was a great example. They couldn't complete the comeback, but they were down the entire game, and they mount that comeback in the latter stages of the third quarter and into the early part of the fourth before it went awry. So, yeah, well, what are you going to do? You get to come back and reload and try to do it again, which is exactly what they'll do. Now, not a great game for Tyrese Halliburton at all. I mean, he have 0 points at the half? I'm not sure what he ended up with. Said he's limited by a calf strain. We'll see how that affects him going forward. But he insisted on playing through a sore right calf in the second half of Indiana's 121-109 loss to the Oklahoma City Thunder in game five, despite concerns at halftime after he aggravated the injury during the first quarter Monday night. There was a play where he went down that we all saw him grab it. So, yeah, it definitely, there was an effect. He could not, he couldn't be Tyrese Halliburton, that was for sure. They're going to need him. They're going to need him when they come back to Indianapolis, if they have any shot at making this happen. Brian says he's been watching basketball at least 55 years. His father was a sportscaster when he was born. Been to a lot of games, more than most. Never saw a dude get free throws off of a jump ball before. Yeah, I wonder about that call. I'm glad you brought that up because, I mean, how do you prove intent? Hey, I missed the ball. It's not a shot, but, well, that's a good point, Brian. But crazy. Robert's not counting them out, but they look more like a wounded duck now. Yeah, absolutely. Hey, we've got lots more coming up from the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios on this glorious Tuesday. It's not real, just kidding. It's a Tuesday like any other, but anytime Mike DeCourcy's with us, it's glorious. How are you, my friend?
I am doing well, Jim. I'd be doing maybe a little better if the Pacers had executed better down the fourth quarter stretch last night, or had maybe done that on Friday and they were still sitting there 3-2 instead of 2-3. But other than that, I have no complaints.
That was, had they completed that, that would have been the comeback that stood out like no other to me, because how that game was going, they were getting the crap kicked out of them. They weren't in it. They were a non-factor. And then all of a sudden, here come the Pacers being the Pacers without Tyrese Halliburton. And they were right there, just could not complete it. But had they been able to, I'm like, how the hell did Oklahoma City let them back in this game? It's just remarkable, especially when they're not firing on all cylinders, and yet they were able to do that to a degree. They got within a one, I think, and then away it went.
Yeah, I thought, honestly, I got no criticisms of Coach Carlisle. He's been phenomenal through last season and this. But I did think that there was a point, maybe.
DJ McConnell?
Yeah, I mean – Andrew Nembhard was so bad last night. And I understand that he's an essential defensive player, but the defense was breaking down anyway. You saw how many times they were hitting the lane and kicking out. So the ball's getting deep anyway, but at least the ball was staying in Pacers' hands and not being thrown away for pick sixes when Andrew Nembhard got back in the game along with Halliburton. That became the decisive point. I thought at that point, after he threw a couple of pick sixes, you had to change it. You had to get him. You had to get TJ back in the game to try to get the offense back on track, and it didn't happen. I understand that defense is an important component as well, but I haven't looked at the box, but TJ's got to be a plus, and there aren't many pluses on that team.
Well, and especially last night, he in that third quarter, man, you talk about the spark plug. He comes in and he does what TJ McConnell does. I think he scored like 6 straight points. He got to the basket. This is a guy. He's like 6'1", whatever he is. At least he looks like that on with the rest of those guys out there.
Yeah, but they list him at 6'2". It doesn't feel right, though, does it?
No, it does not. But he gets to the basket. He just does all these little things. And he is – and I was wondering, man, at the end of that third quarter, I'm like, do you just stick with TJ McConnell here or do you go back to Tyrese Halliburton? He's kind of wounded. He's not really obviously not having a good game. And well, we saw what happened.
I'm looking at the box now and I was correct. TJ and Ben Mathurin were the only two regulars, the only guys who played 20 plus minutes who were pluses. Ben was a +6. And TJ was a +4, and everybody else that played regularly was at least a -5. Siakam was a -5, and gosh, Halliburton was -13, Nembhard -12, Nesmith -12. So I thought that there was a point where there may have been a window for them to change it up. I don't know how much TJ had in the tank because he played his usual complement of minutes, and it's not common for him to go back in with 6 or 7 minutes left to go. But I thought it was something that they should have considered under the circumstances, because Nembhard's offense, the defense was, it wasn't his best. It wasn't his worst, but offensively he was so far off his game. The turnovers that he had were all super damaging. He threw that one pass, one ill-advised pass trying to hit, I think it was Toppin. And Toppin was alone in the post. Whoever the big was, might have been Siakam, might have been Toppin. I'm forgetting now. But whoever it was all alone. But he threw it 6 feet over his head. And that was a play that could have really cut into the lead as well. And then he threw a couple of pick sixes that were super damaging. I mean, Oklahoma City was scoring easily enough against 5 defenders that they certainly were going to convert against 0.
Yeah, and then when he had the jump ball, and he was obviously outmanned from a height standpoint, but he gets called for a foul on a jump ball, and I get what he was probably trying to do, but there is no way on God's green earth that you can act like you know what's in a player's mind. I mean, that's right. Just inadvertent contact.
I will tell you, Jim, I mean, now I've watched 40 years worth of college or 30 years or whatever it's been with no jump ball. So a lot of the basketball that I've watched over the years now has not had jump balls. But prior to the rule change, and then in all the high school games I watched and covered, and all the NBA games I've watched and the few I've covered, I've never seen that called at not one time. I thought that it was so ridiculous for them to call that at that point. Some of the officials' calls in this playoff have been so poor that it's beyond belief. And obviously missing the push-off and the travel on the decisive basket Friday night, the game-breaking basket, that was the one, that baseline pull-up by SGA was the game. And they even talked about it last night and showed it after Rick Carlisle got his technical foul, how bad a call it was. But then this was just preposterous. I mean, that was a bad call, 2 bad calls on 1 decisive play on Friday. But this was just preposterous for an official to try to maintain that McConnell. Look, McConnell's shorter. It's your dumb rule. You should have alternate possession. You're the dumb league that still jumps it up. So you can't blame TJ for being 6'1", 6'2", and unable to jump as high. That's a terrible execution of a really poor rule. I hear all the time we should go back to the jump ball in college basketball. Garbage like that is why we shouldn't. If you're going to have a jump ball, you should be able to pick the guy on the floor to jump. And it shouldn't be a random, well, he's the one who tied it up, so we're going to jump it up. That's a bad rule. It was a bad rule when it was put into basketball 100 years ago or whatever. And it's ridiculous that it's still in there now.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's just ridiculous. And the alternating possession is actually one of the greatest fixes to a rule that I think I've ever seen. It is what it is. But I was like, wait, what? What did they just call? I go, that's not even a shooting. I go, what? How can you? It's just because there's no way you can determine intent. I mean, otherwise, no. It's inadvertent contact. You think guys' hands don't hit each other nonstop during jump balls?
Yeah.
Because he was shorter.
If TJ had kicked him into business, then you could have determined intent. But he's reaching for the ball. That's what you're asking him to do with your dumb jump ball rule. And so he reached and he didn't get the ball. He got the guy's arm. I whoever called that should be embarrassed this morning. Like, that would be me writing an article that said the sun didn't come up today. That's how bad that was.
Yeah, Justin said that's he was cussing like a sailor. He went to bed. He got a little bit animated.
I can understand. Yeah. My wife is asleep in the next room, worried about her Pacers, but she doesn't get off her sleep schedule. So I did not say anything, but I just could not believe that I'd seen that. In a NBA Finals game, to pull that out, as I said, the official who called that should be embarrassed. It's such a bad call that it rises to the level of, for instance, the Denkinger play at first base from the 1985 World Series. I mean, not in terms of decisiveness, but in terms of how wrong it was,
and a crucial moment in a league. Yeah. Without question, that is just unbelievable. And why is it at the professional level we still have such poor officiating calls that end up determining games or going into the determination of the outcomes of games?
Well, I think there's a couple things. First of all, you can't see everything. But the problem is that when you have something like this, or the Friday night play, when it's all right in front of you. I mean, that was, when you think about where the SGA was and where, I think it was Nembhard that was guarding him at this point. It might have been a switch. I can't remember now. But where the defender was and where they were located on the floor, there is an official stationed right there at all times. There's always a baseline official. So the view of that play was not a difficult traffic type thing. It was two guys out in space where an official is located, and the official watches as one, the push-off is executed, which SGA had been doing all night. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander had been doing all night and getting away with it. And then the travel that followed the push-off. And so you have the opportunity to call two violations in one spot, and you're not doing it. That seems intentional to me. That seems to me to be I'm not going to be the person who decides this game kind of thing. Because you couldn't have missed both, Jim. You shouldn't have missed either. If you're a professional official who is at the level where you get an NBA Finals assignment, you shouldn't miss either, but you can't miss both. So they let it go. And it was a terrible call, and terrible enough that it not only was it talked about a lot immediately subsequent to the game, but it was retrieved for conversation during last night's game, which shows to me that that I'm not the only one that finds that to have been egregious.
Yeah, and it is what it is now, but the Pacers they're still not done as much as they're in great peril. They come back home with the opportunity to tie the series and push it to seven games. And they've shown the capability of what they can do on the road. So it's not like they are out of this by any stretch of the imagination, but they have to have a Tyrese Halliburton that is a Tyrese Halliburton. They have to have the one that's averaging 20 points a game, not 11 points a game, which has been the case throughout the playoffs and in their losses. He's been a non-factor.
Yeah, I'm not sure what it is about Tyrese as a player in these circumstances. Don't forget, like you had in that game Ben Mathurin go 2 for 11 from the field. Okay, so he was not on. It's pretty rare for him. He's a pretty important and impressive offensive player, but he had 2 for 11 last night. Halliburton only went 0 for 6. I mean, maybe he knows in his mind he doesn't have it, but he only went 0 for 6, and he didn't do much in terms of his attack of the mid lane. What SGA does better than anybody I can remember seeing is hit that 14-foot floater. And the interesting thing about his ability to do that was last night he did not do the push-off, almost as if he knew he would be watched for that. So he didn't do it, and he was still hitting it. I saw him hit one over Siakam that was just ridiculous. It's like if Siakam in his face can't take that shot away, what do you do? So that happened last night, and Tyrese's version of that is that drive to 12 foot and then the floater. And he did not execute that at all last night. I don't remember seeing him even attempt it. And he's really good at that. And he's also really good at getting all the way to the cup. Yes, he was 0-for-4 from 3-point range, but he only took 2 other shots. And I know he's being defended by Lu Dort, and Dort is fantastic. But you have to put the pressure on Dort in order to maybe get him into foul trouble or to create other action that you can then kick out. I don't think that he was aggressive enough, and that's the part of Tyrese as a great player. And all the nonsense, is he a superstar? Absolutely, he's a superstar. They didn't pay him $250 million. They didn't win five playoff series over the last 2 years without him being a superstar. But he has to play like a superstar in the biggest games for them to win them. Like people forget, not every superstar plays great in every game. I can go back and show you all the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar bad games and the Magic Johnson bad. It's going to happen. But he's got to – if they want to win this series, he's got to have 2 great games now. And it's not just him. Miles Turner's got to be better, and I know Miles was supposedly sick in games 3 and 4. And that was an impact, and maybe last night it was lingered, but he's got to be better. He doesn't have to be 20 points, Miles Turner, but he's got to be the ball comes to you and you're open, and that shot's got to go in more often. Siakam has to start better for them to win on Thursday. There are all these different elements that go into them possibly advancing in this series and taking it to game 7 and then ultimately winning it. Halliburton it starts with, but it doesn't end there.
No, or also with a maybe a great idea. Get rid of the human refs and replace them with AI technology.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are certain sports where you can do that. I mean, we've seen it in tennis. I believe the U.S. Open is down to just the umpire. I believe they're out. I know in Roland Garros they were still using line judges, but I believe I watched the U.S. Open last year, and it was just all technology. And I think you could do that with a strike zone as well in baseball, but it's hard to do that with physical play involved in basketball or football or something like that, where I think it would be very difficult, maybe at least for the time being, for you to see all of that and see what rules violations need to be called. Remember, I mean, there are certain, if you look at an NFL game, there's a hold on every play. If you look at a basketball game, you could call a foul on every intersection just about. And do you want that? Do you want the game to constantly stop? And if you did that, would you then get a game that was completely non-physical? And do we want that? People complain about the NBA regular season being not physical enough. And now, of course, in the playoffs, it's extremely physical. So I don't know that AI is the answer for sports like basketball, football, et cetera, soccer maybe. But I do think there are applications, and I think we're seeing it in tennis. And I do think we're headed that direction with the with how the strike zone is adjudicated in Major League Baseball. I think we'll see that. I do think I might see that in my lifetime.
I'm surprised we haven't already, I'll be honest with you, other than the umpires union fighting against it, and that's the probably the biggest thing right there. But I'll be honest with you, I'm surprised for balls and strikes to give it the absolute uniformity that would across both leagues, across everything, it's going to be the exact same, because we know that certain umpires are, well, he's loose with calls on the outside of the plate, or this guy likes to call him inside. So you've got different facets of the guys, which on the other side, you're like, well, but does that take away some of the character or the texture of the game? Mistakes.
Not for me. I mean, balls and strike calls aren't the character of the game. And one of the things that I've not liked about Major League Baseball during the course of my career is the confrontational nature of the baseball umpire versus those in other sports. I mean, we've all seen it, and that's not universal. I mean, there are lots of umpires who just go out and do their jobs, do them as well as they can, and then go have a beer or a Diet Coke after the game. That's fine. But there are too many umpires who are too eager to get involved in confrontations, and that's a problem. It should never be like that. We've seen it periodically in college basketball. I think it's mostly out of the game now. When I started in covering college basketball, there were a few refs who had that reputation. I don't think there are any or many that have it now. If it is, it's like literally don't need to use all the fingers on my hand to count them. Even guys who had that rep, who are still reffing, I won't mention any names, but they do have a holiday named after them. but even he is no longer, carrying forward in that vein. Most of them understand they need to do the job. They call a technical foul when they feel it necessary, but for the most part, the confrontational element of it is gone from college basketball.
Mike DeCourcy with the Sporting News, Fox, and Big Ten Networks with us here on Indiana Sports Beat Radio. I'm Jim Coyle. We'll be back with more. Welcome back to the Hard Truth to Still & Company Studios on this Tuesday. Mike DeCourcy from the Fox Big Ten Networks and Sporting News visiting with us as generally. Make sure you're giving him a follow and keeping up with all the great content and the Sporting News. Our nation's longest running sports magazine, by the way. It's been around for quite some time.
Coming up on 140 years. In March,
I was thinking 150.
It'll be 140 years in March.
And the fact that they're still going is amazing, because we've seen so many. Well, no, because we've seen so many go by the wayside because of the change in technology. We've just talked about that and changing everything and reading habits and all of that. So to be able to hang on is pretty daggone good, because we've seen others that were pretty venerable but didn't make the cut.
Yes, Sport Magazine, the first, really, my introduction to sports journalism, and it was a great magazine. I bought my first issue when I was 10 years old, and that's gone. And then I became a subscriber to TSN and later on to Sports Illustrated as well. And Inside Sports started when I was in my late teens or early 20s, and that's gone. And really proud that we've been able to hang on and thrive for as long as we have, and expand worldwide into many different countries, different languages, continuing to grow. I'm really proud of my association now for, gosh, it's 30 years, Jim, with the Sporting News. So I haven't been there since 1886.
You should be.
I haven't been there since 1886, but 1995 took a pretty good run.
You should be proud, as you should be. Let's see. AJ Guyton is going to be an assistant coach for the assembly ball team for Indiana's alumni team in the TBT. For not having had a team in for so long in this thing, they're coming in like gangbusters in their second season. They've got a bunch of talent on this thing with Troy Williams and James Blackman Jr. and Yogi Ferrell, Jordan Halls, who is just 2 years removed from playing professionally. So they're coming in like gangbusters, man.
Jordan Hulls, if I was in a pick, you know, it's interesting. Jordan Hulls, who's he's been coaching for the last couple of years. How would you feel like if you were in a gym and he walked in and he's, you know, and if you know the game, you're like, oh man, wait a second, what just happened here? Or you think, I got to surreptitiously pick him for my five. And everybody's going to say, yeah, whatever. And then he's going to start bombing in threes. Jordan was a tremendous player at IU. And it's nice to see him still around the game. Good guy and obviously a tremendous representative for IU.
Absolutely. And that'll be fun for fans as that kicks off here next month. So the TBT with a place there, a regional, I guess you'd say, in at Hinkle Fieldhouse. So very cool. The whole thing is a cool environment. And so it'd be a great time for fans. Purdue also with a team. And speaking of Purdue, Braden Smith is kind of the odds on favorite to probably win the Wooden Award. Everybody's kind of in love with him. In love with this Purdue team, which they've got the same core they have had for 4 years, probably the only team in all of college basketball. And if let's say that he goes on to win the Wooden Award, that would give them three out of the last four with the Jolly Green Giant, Zach Edey. And it just made me think with all that they've had together, if they don't do something, how is that going to be viewed as very underachieving? I mean, what do they have to do to not be? Well, they made it. They did make it to a Final Four, which is a big deal, But man, you've got the 2-time Player of the Year. I think you should.
UConn had a better team, Jim. I mean, UConn's team in 2024 was historically great.
I'm not saying they should have beaten UConn because UConn was they were loaded with talent, NBA type talent. They ran into a better team, but now they have another shot at this. But I just Purdue has never won a national championship, and that's not being held against them here. That's neither here nor there. But man, if you're not going to do it in a 4-year span in which you have three out of the 4 years of the Player of the Year, and they're two different players. I think
there's a couple of things, and I've seen a lot of people that have predicted them to win it this year, and I won't be one of them because I steadfastly maintain, and history steadfastly maintains, that if you don't have first round picks in your rotation, usually multiple, but at least one, that you don't win it. And I know that they did in 2024 with Zach, and they made the championship game, but they just happened to be one of those unfortunate teams that played against another team that was historically great and better than they were. You look at Ohio State in 2007. That was a great Ohio State team. They had three top 25 picks. They had the best big man that we've seen in college basketball in a long time. And it didn't matter because Florida had the reigning national champions return intact and play at the same or better level. It was a better team in 07 than it was in 06. So they didn't win it. So you can't always judge it based on that. I look at this Purdue team and I expect greatness. I expect them to win the Big Ten. I expect them to get a number one seed. I expect them to compete for the Final Four. But winning the national championship, when I see the people who pick them, and I think you'll see, I think John Rothstein might have them at number one right now. I've seen every now and then he'll tweet out his choices. I believe right now he has Purdue listed at number one. And my question that I want to ask every time is, okay, who's their first round pick? And I've had people who I asked said they think Braden will get in there. I was, okay, if you believe that and it happens, then maybe they can win it. I don't know that I believe that. I've seen them pass terrific players like Jalen Brunson over the size issue or whatever it might be that they that holds them back, and they pay for it usually. And I do think that Braden will have a significant NBA career without a doubt. How exactly that entails, I don't know. This depends on where he goes, who they have, all that sort of stuff. But I think he'll be a significant NBA player. But that line for me goes all the way back to 1987 and Steve Alford when they won it at Indiana and he became an early second round pick. That line for me is drawn to now what we're up to 38 years and I guess 37 tournaments or something like that. Every single winner had at least one. And that for me is the obstacle to picking Purdue number one this season. I stood just a few feet away from Kelvin Sampson after this past year's national championship game. And I listened to Kelvin talk about how close they came. And he said a quote that was so profound to me because it was, I knew right away he was wrong. He said, this team was built to win this championship. And I said to myself, no, it wasn't. You don't have any first round picks. I mean, I'm not going to say that to him in pub, but I said it in print because if you don't have those guys, you don't win it. And Florida had those guys, and that's why, and that's a big reason why they won. In the end, those guys make the plays that decide who wins it. It's happened for nearly 40 years, and that. So if Purdue doesn't win it this year, I'm not holding anything against them. For me, it's about getting back to the Final Four. It's about winning the Big Ten. It's about being great, which all of which is within reach for them. And I hope it happens for them. I like Matt. I really admire Braden as a player. You know, Braden has a chance. It's not a guarantee or anything, but he has a chance to become the all-time assist leader in college basketball. Bobby Hurley right now is at 1,076 career assists. And Braden, they'd have to have a long season. And to your point, they have to have a long season, play a lot of games. But he has a chance at that. And it's not one of those deals where R.J. Davis is one of the leading career scorers at Carolina because he played 5 years. No, Braden's played 4 years. He'll have played 4 years. So if he stays healthy through this year, he's got a shot at making it. I think that's an amazing accomplishment for someone who came in. Like Bobby Hurley was at the top of the list when he came into college basketball. He was cream of the crop as a recruit. But Braden quite obviously was not. And for him to get to that assist record, if he matches last year's total, he's at 758. And if he matches last year's total, he gets to 1,071. He is five off. Ooh. So he only has to exceed his total from last season by six assists, which basically means they need to play one more game. They need to play in the Elite Eight. I know they don't want to do that. They want to get all the way back to Indianapolis. And what an amazing occasion that would be to have a Final Four with Purdue in Indianapolis. But if they get back to the Final Four, I think he's going to become the all-time assist leader.
Yeah, Brian asking, can Smith become the TJ in the NBA? I don't think so because I think only because of height, not because of talent. This dude is talented. He can shoot. He can distribute the ball. He obviously has an eye, doesn't make a lot of mistakes. I just don't think from a physical tool that he's going to have the physical tools, speed along with, you know, where he is, dinged, whether it's, you know, I think he's 6 foot at best. And if you're going to be a 6 foot player in the NBA, you're going to have to pick up on some other things. You better have some hops, some speed, something to make up for that. But that's my ignorant opinion.
Well, you know, I would say about, first of all, I wouldn't limit him to that. I mean, I wouldn't say he's got to be a backup or he's got to be TJ just because they share similar physical characteristics. You don't know what he can become because you don't know where he's going to go. It depends on his team. There are other players with small point guards who have had great success. You look at different players around the country or around the league, and for instance, Cameron Payne, a small guy, not super physical, not super strong, but he's been in the league now for I think 8 or 9 years, and he's been on significant teams. The Knicks teams that we watched the Pacers beat the last couple of years. He was with Phoenix in the NBA Finals a few years ago. There are opportunities available to smaller players. However, I read a piece last week, I can't remember where, that they are going away. You're seeing, and this Finals is an example of that, they are going away from smaller players. There are more Shai Gilgeous-Alexanders and Tyrese Halliburtons than there are Chris Pauls out there in the NBA now. Chris was only 6'1 and is an all-time great, but there are a lot more Shays, but of his size, not of his talent. There are a lot more like that. Andrew Nembhard, those guys are much more plentiful in the NBA. So for Braden, he's got to find his niche. He's got to go to the right organization, be drafted by someone who values his great skill and great talent. He's got vision that ranks with the absolute best. There are players out there, Jim, who have been great NBA point guards with above average to exceptional vision. But then there are the elite guys, the guys who see it all, the Jason Kidds and Penny Hardaways and Magics, who see every player and where they are and can hit them with that pass. And Braden ranks with them. And that's why he's got that shot at the assists record. You don't get to 1,000 career assists because you find the open man. No, you get to 1,000 career assists because you find the open man and make the right play, but also because you see things that nobody else sees, and he's in that category. And all of the players who have been in that category usually find a way to make a living in the NBA.
30 seconds. What's up next for you, brother?
I am headed to D.C. for the Club World Cup. I'm going to see Juventus with a couple of American players, Weston McKennie and Timothy Weah. Juventus is a team from Italy in Turin, and they are one of the great powerhouses there. So I'm going to get a chance to see them, hopefully talk to them about what's going on with the men's national team. A lot of heat on Christian Pulisic over the last couple of weeks. And I have a column coming out this morning about how ridiculously he's been treated given what he's put on the line for the national team. Just because he chose to rest in a relatively unimportant tournament this year, people are just haranguing him, Jim. It's not right, and I explain why in the column that's coming today.
Make sure you check that out. Mike DeCourcy with the Sporting News. Appreciate you, my friend, as always.
Thanks, Jim.
You betcha. Thank you. We've got lots more coming up, including a visit by our good friend K-Bro, Kevin Brockway. In the next hour, we're back with more from the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios. And you know that face. You'll know him. You'll love him. You can't live without him. Kevin Brockway joins us now. How was your, my friend?
Good morning. How are you, Jim? That was tough to watch last night with the Pacers in that fourth quarter, a collapse after they had fought so hard to get back in the game, right?
Yeah, we talked about that earlier. It was just in a game where they were just not in it at all. I mean, they were just not in that game. Then all of a sudden, boom, they're able to do what they needed to do to get back. But then it just went awry.
I think you see that so much in basketball, though, too, right? It's like when you have to play uphill, so to speak.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're uphill all that way. Yeah.
You expend so much energy, and it just kind of catches up to you a little bit. I mean, Andrew Nembhard made some bad decisions, and T.J. McConnell was on a roll in the third quarter. But, you got to wonder, do you play him in the fourth quarter? I mean, you've got Tyrese Halliburton as your star, even though he's kind of ailing right now. I think Rick Carlisle had a tough decision there. He went with the star, and it didn't pan out, obviously. And, you come back home for game six. I think this is going to go seven. Yeah, I think the Pacers are going to be resilient enough. They're going to find a way to do it. And, you know, maybe a few more calls will go their way because that generally happens at home most of the time.
Absolutely. Kevin Broccoli. I love that. Here we go. That's a new nickname. Kevin Broccoli. Have you ever chopped broccoli?
Chopping broccoli. You know, I don't know if I ever told you this story, Jim. When I started out at the Key West Citizen, back in the 1990s, you know, one of my jobs was, you know, the Daily Fishing Report, which you can imagine is the most read thing in Key West, Florida. And, you know, people would call up their catches and call in. And so there was this young guy, and there's this old guy who was all excited. He had caught this big mahi-mahi fish. So he calls up the office and he says, "Is Calvin there? Calvin Broccoli?" And so from then on, and you know, somebody else in the newsroom picked it up, of course. And so from then on, that name stuck. You know, my 5 years in Key West, I was Calvin Broccoli. I wasn't Kevin
Calvin Broccoli. Chopping broccoli. I know you're a big fan of the College World Series. Florida not in it this year, and actually the SEC, just you know, two teams and LSC. LSU suspended with UCLA after three innings yesterday. I don't know if that game is probably continued today, but Arizona out. And we have the first no-hitter in the World Series since 1960.
Gage Wood, I mean, he was on, you know, and you're facing Murray State, obviously a team in your neck of the woods that pulled off the upset against Duke. And I mean, Murray State, you know, that's also a great story, right? They have, what, an 800-seat ballpark. Their coach has to mow the lawn there. But they went two and out. They were obviously overmatched in that game by Gage Wood, who, you know, many scouts think is going to be a first-round pick. So tremendous outing by him. Yeah,
it's 19 weird. I mean, strikeouts.
It's in 19 strikeouts. You know, he was on a roll. And, yeah, it's weird not being in Omaha. I missed the Drover, the steakhouse and everything and all that good stuff. But it was a rough end for Florida for sure. And certainly Kevin O'Sullivan made national news with his diatribe against Coastal Carolina. But Coastal Carolina is in the driver's seat in that regional, obviously, having won two. And if LSU can hold on against UCLA, then I think you're going to see LSU and Coastal. And, you know, those crazy Cajuns, man, up in Omaha, they always win that jello shot challenge. They're out in full force, and they love their college baseball. So it'll be a good atmosphere for LSU's in the finals.
Yeah, Louisville hanging on, man. They were in the elimination pool, but they send Arizona packing instead. So the Cardinals continue to roll.
They've got a good lineup, too, because I was watching that series against Miami, obviously, for obvious reasons, and they can hit, you know, they've got some guys up and down that lineup, but it's tough going through the loser's bracket because you got to play kind of like the 3 and 3 days and 3 and 4 days. It really puts the stress on your pitching. So Louisville's going to have to kind of pitch their way back in it to get up to face Coastal again, but Coastal will have their arms ready for sure.
The college basketball, there have been some rule changes for the upcoming season. A coach's challenge is now going to be in play for one thing. That's probably the biggest rule change, I guess, wouldn't you think?
Yeah. The fact that you've got unlimited challenges, which I think is, you know, I don't know if it's going to slow the game down, speed the game up.
Is it unlimited?
Well, I know. I'll have to double check on that. I'm not 100% sure.
I think you have to have a timeout.
Yeah. Let's see exactly on the coach's challenges, but It's going to create some interesting decisions strategically in terms of, you know, how you manage late game situations for sure. I just don't want it to bog down the game too much.
It won't bog down the game because you're talking about a group who's not really used to dealing with those things as much as the professional league. They've been doing it for longer. So now this is a new wrinkle. It takes them sometimes, it seems, forever to adjudicate a review anyway, as it is, even when it's so obvious sometimes. It's like, dude, what are we doing here? Move along.
One challenge. Yes. Challenge is unsuccessful. The coach loses the ability to, well, if it's unsuccessful, it's only one challenge. I guess it's unlimited if you can, you know, if you're successful up until the number of timeouts you have, because coach has to use the timeout to be able to use it. So it's yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they decide that, like, you know, how a coach will discern, you know, what's valuable in terms of that, you know, what when it's worth you know, calling a timeout for review.
What about the option of going back to four quarters for college men's college basketball? They are the only major basketball unit that does not do it. The women do it. The NBA does it. High schools do it. Men's college basketball is the only one that goes on halves still.
You know, it's interesting because I kind of like that marathon element. I think that makes college basketball unique, is that you have that 20-minute grind, right? But, you know, you have the five TV timeouts too. I think there's some people that think with, you know, the fouls and so forth, it would help there in terms of, you know, sitting guys or not losing guys. But there's so many people now. I mean, Todd Golden being one of them. You know, it used to be in the old days. I remember Billy Donovan 10, 20 years ago, you had two fouls. He pretty much sat for the entire first half, unless you ran a zone and they kind of park you in the zone a little bit. Or, you know, you offense defense subbed a little bit, but, Todd Golden and some of these new age coaches are like, two fouls in the first half, no problem. We'll play you the rest of the half. You know what I mean? But, you know, it's a kind of a usage thing. And they feel like, you know, the beginning of the part of the game, the end part of the game, it's all the same. But it takes a lot of discipline to do that. But, you know, maybe you consider also going to six fouls instead of five fouls, considering how physical the game is being played nowadays in college basketball. You know, I know the NBA goes six. You know, maybe that's another option to look at in terms of, rather than going quarters. Because I like that 20-minute marathon aspect of college basketball. I think that makes it unique a little bit.
I don't mind it either, because it for whether you're a fan or the players, it gives you the sense of, hey, we've got time to do this. Just yeah, relax. We can, you know, if you're down, we can make this comeback.
How long would you make the quarters, right? In high school, is it still 8 minutes or no?
It would be 10 minutes. You just divide it up. I mean, it's a 40-minute game.
Yeah, because it's, you know, in the NBA, it's 12. Yeah, a 10-minute quarter seems to go by a little faster than a 12-minute quarter. I don't know. But I guess women's basketball, they do 10, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's the 40-minute game. So, yeah, they just are those 8 minutes? I don't recall, to be honest with you. They're the same.
I believe they're 10-minute quarters for women's basketball.
Fozan, back on. He says, on another note, every time the siren goes off in Ahmad Jordan, the Iranian missiles are over Jordan's skies, and he saw at least one each day. Man, how about a little international reporting there from our man Fozan Masri over in Amman, Jordan? Man, crazy.
I would not want to be there. Not this
no.
Day. Yeah, I would not.
We're thinking about you, man. Just hope they keep going overhead, if anything, bro.
Yeah, that's the main thing. It's
absolutely
the mixed up world out there, as we know.
You didn't know we were an international show, did you?
No, I mean, listen, hey, you know, the World Wide Web, it's you know, it's broadband, but we're on everywhere. You know what I mean? That's you know, amazing. Like, it is amazing how when you're online, like, I remember you know, getting something from a coach from Trinity College in Dublin about enjoying.
You don't say, eh?
Yeah, yeah. And you know why Ireland is the fastest growing country in the world, right?
Oh, yeah, I forgot. Why?
Because its capital is always Dublin.
Yeah, that's it. That's an old K-Bro Dad special, baby. And I'd even heard it, but I forgot the punchline to that.
Yeah.
Next year, college basketball, the Florida Gators, the reigning champion, and Todd Golden, man, he picked up some just the right pieces that he wanted to add, and they should be looking pretty good going back into next season.
Yeah, you know, and they started June workouts, I guess, like most teams around college basketball, and we're actually going to interview some of the newcomers today, Boogie Flan and Xavian Lee. Two of the big time transfers that they got from obviously Princeton and Arkansas. And I'm sure people in your fans region know about Boogie Flan, because he was originally committed to Kentucky And then followed John Calipari to Arkansas, played there 1 year, didn't quite work out. You know, he had like the finger issue last year, which kind of, you know, derailed his season a little bit. Still, you know, averaged about 13 and 5.2 assists last year. But New York City Bronx point guard, 6'2", you know, has some flash to his game, obviously. You know, five-star talent. So we'll see how he fits in. Now, you know, I talked to his high school coach, Tony Massaloni, who is up in White Plains, New York. And he talked a lot about him getting stronger, too, you know, getting a little more physical and the strength and conditioning program at Florida as well, because I think there was a feeling last year he got knocked around a little in the SEC, too, and maybe that did lead to the thumb injury a little bit, but that's going to be interesting to see. So, you know, I think it's looking, you know, probably with Alex Condon coming back too, which was huge. Tommy Houck, they've got the entire front line back, Ruben Chinyelu. I mean, they're going to be a preseason top five team. Are they going to be number one? A lot of people are high on Houston, you know, with what Kelvin Sampson has coming in. Some people are high on Purdue because of Kaufman Wren and Brayden Smith. But we'll see, you know, and it's as we know, it's been a long time that a Big Ten team has won a national championship as well. So you kind of take that with a grain of salt.
Well, you bring up Purdue. I was just having this conversation with Mike DeCourcy a little bit ago, and I'm not trying to throw shade at Purdue, but if, let's say, Brayden Smith goes on and becomes the Wooden Award winner, that will give them three of the last four with two different players. What do they have to do to not be viewed as underachievers in that span? I mean, they did go to a Final Four, to a championship game.
Yep.
But, you know, I think back to those Kentucky teams that had all those number one recruiting classes and didn't do diddly at the end of the day. And how is this Purdue group at the end of the day? I know they're going to be viewed as being very successful in the conference, but outside of the conference,
I would say, yeah, Matt Painter needs that national championship. I will say that to completely validate what he's done. But it has been a remarkable stretch of consistency. You got to give him that. And you got to give him, you know. But I do think some of it's an indictment on the Big Ten, Jim. And I don't know what the answer is with regards to that. As a conference, they've been kind of the bridesmaids for the last 25 years, right? They've had so many Final Four teams that haven't gotten it done in the Final Four. And what does that tell you? I don't know. You know, does that tell you that they don't have the elite of the elite? You know, Mike DeCourcy always talks about two or three pros that you need to win it all. And do they are Big Ten schools really attracting that level of player? I think that's the question. But then, you know, you look at the number of Indiana alums that are in the NBA, and you know, you talk about a program that's underachieved given some of their talent as well.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt.
You can make the argument too. So it's interesting, but yeah, no, this would be the year for Matt Painter to you know, hopefully take that next step. And listen, I really, you know, during my time there, I really enjoyed dealing with Matt Painter, you know, class guy.
Oh, he's a
stand-up guy. And has had a really remarkable stretch there in terms of Big Ten championships, consistency. You got to give him that. And you know, listen, Zach Edey was a force of nature in terms of his size. And not just his size, but his, you know, because, you know, Florida has Olivier Rieu down here, who's 7'9", but he's still a ways away. You know, he redshirted last year. This year, you know, he's still a preferred walk-on where, you know, maybe he'll come in garbage time at the end of the game. But
he doesn't even have a scholarship?
To be able – no. And to be able to develop someone of that size is not easy. You know, and certainly, you know, Edey was a guy that was not just big, but he was coordinated, and that's what made him special. You know, you just can't – you know, you can't expect a 7'9" – you know, not all 7'9" kids or 7'8" kids or 7-footers are, you know – to that level athletically where they're going to be able to compete at a high level. And Matt Painter deserves credit for identifying those kind of guys that are not just that big, but guys that can are agile and can play the game and can go out and switch and do the kind of things that they need to do to be successful in major college basketball.
Yeah. It's still obviously way early. So we don't know who's going to be what. Illinois brought in a bunch of Eastern Europeans. Don't know what they're going to look like. Michigan State, big question mark. I think Michigan, in my personal opinion right now, from what I know, is going to be the team to look for to win the Big Ten. That's just my pick. And
let's not forget they have a coach that knows what he's doing too, that we both have a high amount of respect for, that was born and bred in Indiana, that worked under Bob Knight, that he knows what's going on, and worked at Florida under Mike White. And I will make the argument that the beginning of the end of Mike White's tenure at Florida was when Dusty May left. So he is a shining star in this, coaching, as is Todd Golden, who proved it as well. I think Dusty's time will come where he, gets to the Final Four again and maybe goes a little bit further.
A lot of coaching changes in the Big Ten over the last few years. Of course, we got Darren DeVries now and Ben McCollum there at Iowa. You've got a new coach at Maryland. Dusty May, new into the league as well. But the league's going to look different. You talked about the Big Ten. Well, Iowa, they're going to go from this fast-paced up-and-down play to scoring 80 points a game to scoring 50 points a game. Whew! Unless they're winning, I don't know how much fun the fans in Iowa are going to have with that one.
It's fascinating whenever you see a coaching change, how it is like completely, a lot of times you go completely the opposite direction of what the previous coach was, right? If someone is soft on discipline, then you bring in someone that's harder, for example. You see that a lot in coaching and football. As well as basketball. It's usually like the opposite kind of guy. Hey, take a look at the Pacers, right? They tried to experiment with that Nate Bjorkstrand. It didn't work out. So they got a veteran guy, Rick Carlisle, and he's got him in the NBA Finals. Someone with coaching experience too. So you see that all the time whenever throughout coaching hires, is that you tend to go with someone who was kind of the opposite of what the previous person was. But yeah, McCollum, it's – listen, and with the 18-team league, and obviously you still got Mick Cronin, right, at UCLA complaining about the travel. It's fascinating to see in, year two with that expanded league, just like with the expanded SEC here too with Texas Oklahoma. And Porter Moser, I was kind of a little surprised that he survived in Oklahoma. And there's some rumors he was going to go to Villanova. It didn't work out. But yeah, it's just the adjustment, certainly, of this league is interesting as Jim Coyle exits stage left here. So I guess I'm going to have to carry things for a little bit. But the Big Ten, SEC, obviously, ACC, can the ACC get back on track? It's going to be a fascinating watch in college basketball this year. And it's going to be, an interesting landscape when you look at, and let's not forget UConn too, and the Big East.
SEC as a whole, are they going to repeat or have a repeat performance of what they did last year with putting virtually every team into the daggone tournament? What an incredible season the SEC had last year.
Yeah, and certainly the coaching is there and the players are there to possibly do it. And I think that I do think Auburn and Tennessee might take a little bit of a hit, but I think Alabama will be there. I think I think with what Florida has coming back, remember, they didn't win the SEC regular season championship. Auburn did. But I think Florida probably comes into this year as the front runner to win the SEC regular season championship based on everything that's coming back.
Jason asks, are you a Florida Panthers fan? The NHL Stanley Cup.
I am an Islanders fan because I'm originally from New York. But I kind of dig the Panthers a little bit. I'm not huge into hockey, but I'm happy to see them, possibly repeat. Right. And they'll go tonight at the it's funny. Their arena is like right next to a shopping mall, the Sawgrass Mills in Plantation, Florida. It's kind of an odd place for a hockey arena. You can go outlet mall shopping during the day and then just go to the arena. And they used to hold a basketball tournament down there, the Orange Bowl Classic. I used to go down there. It's a nice, West Broward suburban area. And they'll all be going nuts for their Panthers tonight. And there are a lot of transplanted Canadians, you know, in Broward and, Palm Beach County too. And a lot of them like wearing their Speedos on the beach. And they're not looking Speedo ready. Some of these guys in their 40s and 50s.
Nobody wants to see that.
So those Canadians, that are transplanted Panthers fans might be celebrating a Hollywood beach with their.
What's with that? Is that the European influence or something? Yes, nobody wants to see that.
Exactly. So.
I mean, what is it? They think they're going to be in a situation where they need the tan lines reduced for some reason. What's going on with the thinking there?
Yeah, it's kind of wacky in Hollywood Beach. Yeah, you know what I mean? You know, just remember, because I remember this when I was in Key West and Fantasy Fest too, when people in the body paint, the people that show the most are the people that you don't necessarily want to see.
Yeah, exactly. What's up next for you, brother?
So off season, basketball and football, and before you know, we'll have SEC media days in football. I'll be taking a little vacation in early July too. And my Mets got swept by the Rays, but they're still in first place. So I'm hoping that maybe this will be the year. We'll see.
Yeah, my Reds, they're just being the Reds, unfortunately. They are.
But Dela Cruz is on a tear there, right?
Yeah, but he has been for 2 years now, but it's not helping the rest of the team. They're not putting talent around him. They are two games above 500, which is crazy considering the fact that they're fourth in the Central Division, yet still over 500.
Yeah, well, you know, this season is a marathon, and you got a good guy in the dugout too, and Terry Francona. I think he'll keep him in it.
Yeah, they're over 500 and still seven games back.
That is wacky. Well, you know, the Cubs really stocked up that lineup, so they're a tough offensive team. And of course, as a Mets fan, I'm still frustrated over that Javier Baez trade where we gave them Peter Crow Armstrong, who's a budding star there. So he's whose mom, by the way, was the mom in the movie Little Big League, an actress. So that's an interesting sidelight.
And then the Central Division, the top four teams, all in the plus category of the run differential. That's the only division that has four teams in the plus differential category.
So you got Milwaukee, you've got the Cubbies, you got the Reds. But then you have the Pirates are struggling.
Well, but the Cardinals. Don't forget about the Cardinals. The Pirates.
The Fredbirds, yeah.
Yeah, the Pirates are our good friend Mike DeCourcy's Pittsburgh Pirates are. They're sucking up last place.
I know. You 30. Got Paul Skeens, though, which is, once every 5 days you have something exciting to watch there.
And someone just mentioned this, but how about the Cubs? I mean, they have the same amount of wins as the LA Dodgers.
The Cubbies are and Craig Council, and they've spent the money, and they got Kyle Tucker. They have a tough lineup for sure. Questionable pitching, but they can hit.
What's Florida football going to look like?
Florida football is going to be, you got DJ Lagway back, and there are a lot of questions, obviously, about his shoulder. But if his shoulder is healthy, got a really good offensive line, All-American center returning. I think the prognosis is pretty solid for them. They got this freshman receiver, Dallas Wilson, tore it up at the spring game. I think he had 10 catches for 195 yards. He's got an SEC-ready body, 6'2", 209. So, Lagway's going to have some weapons. Jaden Ball was a guy who came on last year, a freshman running back, who's going to be a sophomore this year, along with Jacoby Jackson. I think offensively they'll be pretty good. Defensively, up the gut a little bit, I think it's going to be the big concern. Can they stop the run? They lost, Cam Jackson, who's a fifth-round pick. He's a big 399-pound guy in the gap at nose guard. And they don't really have that bulk to replace him. But we'll see, how that transpires during the course of the season or what kind of adjustments they can make there.
Yeah, I'm ready for college football, man. I'm really wondering to see how their season's going to go. I think that they're going to have another fantastic season. And for me, it's whether or not they end up going 9-3 or 10-2. And if they go 10-2, I think that that can get them back to the college football playoffs because of their schedule, because of three of the road games are against Iowa, Oregon, and those are back-to-back games, actually, and then Penn State later. But they have a three-game stretch in which they open Big Ten play at home against Illinois, go on the road against Iowa, then go on the road to Oregon. There will be no discussion about Indiana's schedule this season.
Yeah, no, and listen, Kurt Cignetti has it going for sure. Who are their non-conference games?
Old Dominion, Kennesaw State, and Indiana State. That Indiana State game is coming the third game of the season, so yes, the offense will be kind of in tune there. I'm like, oh, that could be ugly, really, really ugly.
Kennesaw Mountain Landis State, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
The you know, Florida is opening with Long Island University, which is interesting. They're an FCS school. And they're FCS, but somebody emailed me that they might be, you know, the worst FCS school in the country. So that's going to be pretty, you know, dangerous in the swamp. That's going to be, you know, pretty ugly in the swamp. But they've got LSU and Miami back to back on the road. Weeks 3 and 4. So that's going to be kind of their tough. And then they have a bye week, and then they're home against Texas and Arch Manning. So those three games are going to tell a lot about what kind of season Florida's going to have.
Yep. We'll certainly find out, brother. And hopefully we'll be doing some CFP talk, baby.
Yeah, of course.
What's your plans for vacation?
I'm just going to go to New York and DC a little bit. Should be fun. Yeah.
Nice. Meeting with the president.
Go down to Orlando a little bit for the 4th of July. And then after that, flying up to New York. So it should be good.
Yeah. Sounds good. Maybe if you can, a little Home Depot, there's time.
You never know. Anything is possible. Any Lowe's. Maybe I might be partial to Lowe's or whatever, but
I'm just kidding.
I don't know who your advertisers are. So maybe I should,
neither one of those, so we're good to go. I'd love to have either of them. Well, brother, I cannot thank you enough, as always.
Thank you. What are those? Are those like running things in the background, or no? 349-199 or whatever. Or the
what are you talking about?
Upper right hand corner. You have like, oh, they almost look like running bib numbers or something.
Oh yeah, rodeo back numbers. Back
oh rodeo. Behind. Okay. Yeah. All right. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I was my rodeo, some, that, just yeah. Some of my rodeo back numbers, some of the old ones, some of the cooler ones.
Well, you know, as they say, this ain't your first rodeo, you know?
Exactly. And I can say so that and mean it, baby. Ba-dum-bum.
All right.
But yeah, man, we'll enjoy some summer vacay time. I like to plan a little of that myself. We'll see. But appreciate you as always, and look forward to doing this again.
Yep. Hang in there, Jim, and go Patriots.
Jason's heading to Northern New York in July. I've never heard it called Northern New York.
The Adirondacks is beautiful there. Yeah. Yeah. It's where I did a lot of fishing growing up, and it's gorgeous country up there. Enjoy it. Yeah. Mount Marcy, Lake Placid, where they had the Olympics.
Right.
Yeah. That area is beautiful.
Well, enjoy it. Go do some skating, some ice skating, figure skating or something.
Yes. If I can keep my balance.
Yeah. Enjoy it. Kevin Brockway, our good buddy, now with the Florida Gainesville Sun, rather, down there in Gainesville, covering the Gators, former IU beat writer. We've got more coming up from the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios on this Tuesday. Very, very happy to have you along for the ride. Hope you're doing well as this early portion of the week getting started. A little soggy out there. It's looking to stay that way. Have not looked at the upcoming forecast, but I think it's just going to be kind of rainy, man. Just a weird couple of days here. So, yeah, 76% chance of rain today, 58% tomorrow with a high of 84. That'll get up there nice and muggy. Yeah, that humidity hits store. You certainly know that when it rears its ugly head. But, oh my. And then beginning Saturday, Oh, man, I am not looking forward to that. The 90s. Here they come. Here come the 90s. It's like the mummies. Here come the mummies. Indiana basketball set to host 7'3" prospect Luigi Suigo. I hope that's how you pronounce his last name. But that begins today at some point. His visit overlaps with that of top 25 prospect Latrell Almond, who also being courted by Darren DeVries and staff. As the Indiana Hoosiers are making a run on the recruiting trail. Now, the thing with Suigo, he's a 7'3" center who could reclassify. Purdue and Indiana were his second and third official visits, Illinois being the only other program to get him on campus thus far. Now, that is interesting to mention because you've heard me talk about Illinois. I already have like five Eastern European players, and they could literally become Serbia West if they were to add another foreign player on that team. And I know that Illinois fans may be completely fine with it, but I have the same opinion about that as I did when Marshall came in, loaded up their soccer program with all starters from outside of the country. And I just don't see that as a way for American universities to go. Now, I'm not saying that these guys shouldn't be allowed to play. They absolutely should be. But should there be limits on how many foreign players can be brought into the country just to play on your athletics program? Especially when we're talking basketball, these guys have been playing professionally and basically. But go to thehoosier.com and you can see a complete visit primer for Luigi's visit. And then, of course, they'll have the results of that as well. But, man, he is a big man, and that would probably go well with But how would that fit into what Indiana's plans are? Seriously, with what Darren DeVries is trying to do offensively and defensively, all that stuff affects the other. They all have each link is connected. So we'll see. But all kinds of offers going out as well. It's nearly impossible for me not to keep up with them, but that's why a subscription to thehoosier.com, you are up to date. Every single thing is in there. But Indiana basketball also extended an offer to one of the most highly regarded prospects in the 2027 class, 6'7" forward Marcus Spears Jr. The Hoosier.com confirmed that over the weekend. He plays his high school basketball at Dynamic Prep down in Texas. Currently ranked as the number 9 overall player in the class of 2027. Number 2 overall recruit in the state of Texas, according to the On3 industry ranking. That's big. Texas puts out some talent purely because of the size. You've got multiple cities that are some of the biggest in the United States. Of course, Texas with an extremely large population, one of the largest in the United States as well. So tons of talent. And for him to be the number 2 ranked player, that's saying something. So Indiana looking at high-end players. Sammy Jackson on a visit over the weekend. Indiana's bringing him in. And there are more coming. Isaiah Hill is an IU basketball target. I could go on and on. Arifin Dion, mutual interest growing between Indiana and the top 40 center. It's a ton of information that would take me too long to deliver to you here, but that's why you can go to thehoosier.com and find it all. scholarship offer to four-star center Collins Onyeka. We've talked about that one before. Bryson Howard as well. But it is a busy, busy time for these coaches as they are out and about and bringing these guys in-house. Football. Indiana football has absolutely been killing it, as a matter of fact. They have been just landing commitment after commitment. The most recent one, 2026 three-star running back Jerrion Campbell commits to Indiana yesterday. Indiana football picked up another commitment in that class with Jerrion, running back. His commitment comes to the Hoosiers after he was in Bloomington on a visit this past weekend. He's a Georgia native. He announced his pledge on social media Monday evening. So it's basically as soon as he got back from his visit, he was in. 6 foot, 190-pound halfback. Campbell is rated as a consensus three-star recruit and number 39 running back in the country. Pretty good. I mean, yikes. That's up there. He ultimately chose Indiana over a host of SEC schools, includes Georgia Tech, which is not in the SEC. Are they? Are they in the ACC? Ole Miss, Georgia, Auburn, and South Carolina. Man, he even making me question who's where. Jeremy Johnson of Dogs HQ described Campbell as loud as a ball carrier. So the recruits that Cignetti and crew are bringing in are just getting better and better. They are more specific. They are direct to what they want. They are the kind of guys, Jason says, reminds him of Stevie Scott. Well, that's a powerful deal. He's a powerful. Indiana also extends an offer to the 2028 in-state wide receiver, Maddox Weil. I mean, that's 3 years down the road, and Indiana is working at it. You get an offer that far out in advance from Kurt Cignetti, they believe in it. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Thank you, Justin. But Maddox Weil, a rising wide receiver prospect in the 2028 class, picked up an offer from Indiana on June 10th, adding the in-state program to a growing list of power conference suitors. He's from Fort Wayne, Northrop High School. Our listeners on 1380 The Fan up in Fort Wayne, Fort Wayne Sports Station. He's a high school teammate with Jerquadin Guilford, the state's top-ranked player in the 2026 class and a priority Indiana target. So relationship there. Indiana's offer came directly from offensive coordinator and wide receivers coach Mike Shanahan, with whom Weil is eager to continue building rapport. It seems like every position coach on Indiana is just doing a tremendous, tremendous job recruiting off defensively. I know Brian Haynes is leading the way in a lot of that as well. So it's going to be fun. I am really looking forward to this football season. I know that a lot of these guys are in the future, but I'm ready and don't have to wait long. Next month, Big Ten Football Media Days happen out in Las Vegas. So you'll have that going for you, which is nice. But the offers, the commitments continue to roll. Go to thehoosier.com if you want to keep up with all of it, because it is all there. And that's about the only way you're going to be able to keep up with all that is happening, because it is nonstop. Every day, something new happens. It's either an offer or a commitment every day, and then on both sides. So we'll keep you updated no matter what. And we'll take a quick pause for the cause. We've got more coming up from the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios on this Tuesday. Glad to have you along. Appreciate you joining us, no matter where or how you're listening, whether it's on one of our great affiliates like 97.7 ESPN. The ref, always the right call down in Evansville, or the voice of the region up in the region. 12:30 a.m., 104.7 FM, WJOB, and on Fort Wayne on Fort Wayne Sports Station, 1380 The Fan. Keep it locked where you have it. You've got it in the right place throughout the day. Robert says, with the Big Ten now extended to the West Coast, how long before they start playing the championship game in Las Vegas? Nice warm venue, good vacation destination. Gotta wonder. Well, that's not a question. It's going to happen. It's already been discussed. That's part of the reason that they're having the Big Ten media days out there. It's kind of not a test run of sorts, because this is on a much, much smaller scale, but it's getting people used to that. And I'll be honest with you, I've always gone to Big Ten media days, and I'm not sure if I'm going this year or not, partly because the hours screw everything up. I can't wait there's a 3-hour time change, but I can't wait 3 extra hours to do the show. So not sure if I'm going, to be honest with you. And I think that, well, at least I know for men's basketball, the first time they had it up in Minneapolis, Indiana has far and away the biggest media contingent. Part of that's because of the media school with all the students, but even if you took them out, Indiana would still have the largest media contingent covering the Hoosiers than any other team in the Big Ten, which is impressive, because they're not even close to being the biggest city, biggest school, biggest anything. But I was the only media member at Big Ten basketball media days that year, that first year up in Minneapolis, which was utterly shocking. But I'm considering not going to Vegas just because of the time issues. And so we'll see. But plenty more coming up. But yeah, no, that game will be played in Las Vegas at some point. I have no doubt. Not only that, I think that the Big Ten basketball tournament might, I don't know, man. I'm not saying that it won't be, but there are just too many teams. There's no reason to take that out west. I don't see what it gains. I really don't, because you're putting the majority of the fan bases of the teams in the conference at a time disadvantage. So what are you really gaining? I don't think that you gain anything, but we'll see. Russell says, does Steve Alford coach in Nevada, and could they join the Big Ten if so? Well, yeah, he does coach Nevada, and no, they can't join the Big Ten. They're not even close to being a type of university that the Big Ten would have in there. So that puts an end to that one. But those games they're already moving around. Detroit now, but that is at least a little closer. I get it. It gives those cities an opportunity, but you're also giving places that have never done it before a shot to do it, which I that's good for the towns, I guess. But is it? It's not like this is bringing in these media days things. They're not bringing in traffic. I mean, the guys that come in to cover that stuff, drop in the bucket. It's a drop in the bucket. So I would prefer to see it stay in selfishly, I'm going to say Indianapolis. But it's also because it is the best place to handle this stuff. It's been proven over and over and over. So we'll see how it goes. Russell says he could see the Big Ten tourney in L.A. sometime in the future. Now that would really, I mean, what's the difference? Las Vegas is and L.A. are on the same time, right? Both on Pacific Coast time. So I yeah, that would be, I don't know about that one. Plus, you know, LA, definitely out in LA, it's, you want to talk about getting lost in the shuffle, even up in, when it was in Minneapolis, majority of people don't know that, like media days, no one knew that stuff was even going on. Now, is it bigger for the tournaments? Yeah. Now there you have people coming in, you have groups of people coming in, makes more sense, but, not for media days. Just leave it alone. Don't screw with it. You know, it works. You want the best coverage? Don't mess with it. Like I said, not that I matter, but I'm very possibly not going to go to football media days for the first time since we've been doing the show. So we shall see. Jason says Chicago is the first place. They were, and that's where the Big Ten is located, but Indianapolis is the best place for all of that stuff to be housed. It would really be nice if the Big Ten was located in Indianapolis, but that's okay. You've got the NCAA and you get plenty of NCAA locations with Final Fours and all of that. So we've got that going for us, which is nice. Tomorrow on the program, Dylan Sin will join us. Kyle Nenrip will see what's up next for the high schoolers. Now that all-star games have come and gone, guys have reported to the colleges that they're going to. Some of them, like Malachi Moreno for Kentucky, I don't think he didn't even get to play in the second all-star game because he had to report to Kentucky. Stupid to me. Are you? I've talked about this before. Are you serious that playing in an all-star game is really going to affect them? And I know that people are going to say yes. I say horse hockey to that, but nobody cares what I think. Rick Bozich all with us tomorrow as well. The captain joins us. We'll see what he thinks on how things are going as well. And the Patriots have another shot at it. What is it? But last night was Monday, so Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Thursday coming up at Gainbridge Fieldhouse. Game six. Can the Pacers force a game seven? Let's hope so. Not only that, you'd hate to see them lose the NBA Finals on their own court. That would stick it even more. Speaking of, I mentioned Rick Bozich, Kentucky and Louisville, they've been having some fun going at it. They lost their, Kentucky loses one of their main football coaches to Louisville. But then ironically, Indiana has beaten Louisville on a couple of their last recruits. They had the flip, and then they had one of these guys chose Indiana over Louisville as well. So it's going to be a fun battle as this goes forward. So looking forward to it all, man, and looking forward to coming back tomorrow to doing it again. I cannot thank each and every one of you enough. Go out and have yourselves an absolutely incredibly great day. Until tomorrow, I'm Jim Coyle. I will see you on the radio.
Thanks for listening to Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube page for more clips and team coverage of Indiana basketball, football, and more. You can also find full episodes and tons of other content on thehoosier.com. We'll see you next time for another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio.
Hello, everyone. Jim Coyle from Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Thank you so much for listening to our content. We hope you enjoy it. Make sure you're a subscriber at either your favorite podcast download or on our YouTube channel at Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Either way, just give us a like on any of those. We would greatly appreciate it. It helps us immensely. Thank you and have a great day.